What's the downside of diversity? To find out, I visited the Hasidic supermarkets in the overwhelmingly Jewish neighborhood of Borough Park, where something pretty amazing happens thousands of times each day. This is the Super 13, one of a whole bunch of kosher stores that I visited recently. Pretty much everyone who shops here is Hasidic or Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox. Everything on the shelves that can be kosher in here is kosher, and often a brand you might not have heard of.
If you look at these beans, this is just a pack of beans.
Yosef Rappaport's a Hasidic journalist in his 50s, and like most of the other men around here, he's wearing a long black coat and black hat to go with his white beard.
Geffen navy beans.
Geffen navy beans. Where are the Goya beans?
No Goya. Same with yogurt and soft drinks and everything else. But here's where things get interesting. Over by the cash registers, people roll up with their shopping carts just crammed with stuff. Sometimes hundreds of dollars worth of food. But instead of pulling out cash or a credit card and paying up, they just take their groceries and they walk out.
Most of the people who check out do not have any money on them. They don't need to. They are, if you see a large wagon filled with stuff, it's usually regular customers. They usually have an account. It's called Aufschreiben in Yiddish. It means write it up. Just write it up on my account. And once a week or once a month, the breadwinner, usually the husband, comes here. Or if he's late, he'll get a call. Pay up your account.
Essentially, it's an honor system. Yosef says it goes back to life in the shtetl, but with a high-tech twist, because now everyone's names and account balances are stored in the supermarket's database. If someone's 30 days behind, the cashier's computer knows. But Simcha Friedman, who manages the Super 13, says the store tries really hard not to embarrass anyone. For instance, they don't send collection agencies after delinquent customers, even if they owe thousands of dollars.
It's not like he's going to Wisconsin or someplace. It's a community. I'll see him. If they don't see him today, I'll see him tomorrow, next week. I know his father, his cousin.
The system depends on these really close social ties. What's amazing is just how much outstanding credit a store like Super 13 carries.
It's in the hundreds of thousands. But you
have hundreds of thousands of dollars in
outstanding,
credit right now.
Yeah.
Outstanding,
yeah. But not complaining.
It's just the way it is.
Yes, that's not an issue.
Friedman figures that about 70% of his customers shop on credit. That includes low-income customers, some of whom will never pay off their bills. That's because of another feature of this system. Wealthier customers regularly pay off the debts of poor customers through a third-party organization. Often the rich person won't even know who they're helping, and the poor person won't know who's helping them. It's all done anonymously because that's how the medieval, very influential Jewish scholar Maimonides said it should be done. This is an incredible support system, but it's only possible because of the strong social ties within the community and the fact that rich and poor Orthodox Jews live near each other and shop at the same supermarkets. They're economically integrated. If they weren't, or if the community were more dispersed, it wouldn't work. In other words, it works because Orthodox Jews are clustered together. But there can be a trade-off to those strong social ties. Ido Tavori, an Israeli-born sociologist, spent 3 years living in an Orthodox Jewish community in L.A.
I would say that too often there's a relationship between the strength of ties and the exclusiveness of the community, whereas the stronger the ties within, usually, the stronger the boundaries between inside and outside.
Members of the community, he said, don't just define themselves by what they believe in, but what they reject as well. In this case, that might mean homosexuality or modern feminist values. And in other cases, another ethnicity or racial group. NYU sociologist Colin Gerald Mack said that after 9/11, Americans became really patriotic. They came together.
That's very positive. But the negative implications of that were it also then went the other way and heightened, it seems to me anyway, the out-group exclusion.
Meaning discrimination against Arabs and Muslims went up. In a sense, that was the cost of increasing social ties between Americans of vastly different backgrounds. Or take the case of Italians and Jews living in Brooklyn in the 1970s and 80s.
Canarsie was their last stand.
Gerald Mack pointed to the work of Jonathan Ryder in his seminal study of the neighborhood. Ryder found that ethnic whites living in Canarsie had grown hostile to the Great Society initiatives of the 1960s and the notion of a diverse, multi-culti nation. Italian Americans and Jews in the neighborhood weren't close to each other, but they did become close by finding something in common.
The Italians and Jews in Canarsie were able to set aside their ethnic differences and animosity and actually formed incredibly strong, whether it's parent-teacher associations or neighborhood improvement. And so there's kind of a feel-good story here in which Italians and Jews no longer thought of themselves primarily as Italians and Jews, but as members of Canarsie. Of course, part of the reason why what fomented this was they both felt the threat of African Americans moving in and engaged in what he described as retaliatory practices that many of us would consider to be quite discriminatory.
But back to Borough Park. To outsiders, the ways of Orthodox Jews, from their distinct clothes to their overt religiosity, may seem out of step with modern urban life. However, in some ways, Ida Tavori says they're remarkably inclusive.
One of the people I met in my work had a physical disability that in many other contexts would mean he's extremely isolated. He couldn't walk, his cognitive functioning wasn't all it could be. But in the Orthodox community, he was constantly invited. He was constantly part of the action. And it was striking how much of a better life it was for him, I believe, than it would have been if he would have been born into a secular, what we think about as modern, home.
That sense of belonging, Tavori said, of being needed, was what he thinks is missing in mainstream urban life.
That you are needed, both on a religious level, but also you're needed just on a social level. You're needed because people count on you to be there, because people care where you are if you go.
He found, he said, that it's possible to feel truly connected.
Even though I didn't become Orthodox, there were moments in my study where I almost did.
Ultimately, he chose to stick with a somewhat anonymous life that also gives him independence. But having experienced both sides, he knows what he's missing, what many of us are missing by staying modern, secular, unattached. This is Micropolis. I'm Arun Venugopal at WNYC.